morning's scripture reading comes from the book of Numbers. You can follow on the screen, or if you have your new Bible, you can follow along. They're also, of course, available in the pews before you or on that app. But I invite you to follow as we hear these words of the Lord from the book of Numbers. Now Caleb calmed the people before Moses and said, "We must go up and take possession of it, because we are more than able to do it." But the men who went up with him said, "We can't go up against the people because they are stronger than we." So they started a rumor about the land that they had explored, telling the Israelites, "The land that we crossed over to explore is a land that devours its residents. All the people we saw in it are huge. We saw there are the Nephilim, the descendants of Anak, who come from the Nephilim. We saw ourselves as grasshoppers, and that's how we appeared to them." That night, all the members of the community raised their voices and wept aloud. All the Israelites grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole assembly said to them, "If only we had died in Egypt or in this wilderness. This is the Lord. Why is the Lord bringing us to this land only to let us fall by the sword? Our wives and children will be taken as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt?" And they said to each other, "We should choose a leader and go back to Egypt." This is the word of the Lord for us, the people, the word of God for us, the people of God. Thanks be to God. I love this passage. It's so whiny, and we'll get to that in a little bit. It's just, did you pick that up? Oh, it's so whiny. And speaking of whiny, if you are a person who loves to follow along or guess what the sermon title is going to be, just don't even try. I'm jumping ship off of tradition to innovation, if you saw that. Cool name, catchy thing. I'm going to talk about that maybe in a Bible study this winter, but I'm going to go in a different direction this morning. So the direction I'm going in is my favorite time of the year. It's supposedly fall this week, I guess. Now, the temperatures aren't telling us that quite yet, but Starbucks is. They started selling their pumpkin spice latte. Anyone get one yet? Yeah, me too. I'm the prototypical, college-aged white girl, because they all get the pumpkin spice latte. That's the joke. Oh, Starbucks is selling their lattes. I even smelled some bonfires in our neighborhood the other weekend, even though it was still like 90 degrees. And you know it's fall because the Chicago Cubs are once again heading into the playoffs with the best record in baseball. Yay, but that still sounds so strange, doesn't it? One of those things is not like the other. One of them just doesn't seem to belong. I remember sitting in my great-grandpa's kitchen eating an ice cream cone, watching these hapless Cubs play. They have a long history and reputation, don't they? It's hard for me to believe that they had the best record, and it's even worse for me to hope that this might actually be the year, because I've seen it all before, and I've heard the stories. It's been 107 years since the Cubs last won the World Series. Anyone that old yet? 107 years! A lot's happened in that time. 107 years, 107 different teams, and 107 different ways of falling short. It's a different year, it's a different team, but it's the same old Cubs, right? Oh, several years ago, Charles Schulz, he wrote a Peanuts cartoon strip about a different baseball team managed by Charlie Brown. In the cartoon, Lucy returns to the mound and hands Charlie Brown the baseball. She says, "Oh, I thought I had it that time, manager. But as the ball was coming down, I started thinking about all the other ones I've missed before. The past got in my eyes. The past got in my eyes." The past has a sneaky way of doing that, doesn't it? Teams try to win, and yet they battle not only the team they're playing, but the long history of failure and falling short as well. Think of golfers, and there was just recently the golf tournament right down the street. And I think of all the times when you're looking at that green. Any golfers in here? The Mac Reynolds tournament scramble is coming up soon. Sign up if you haven't yet. It's out on the in the Connection Central. But if you're looking at that green and it's surrounded by water, you got two choices of what you're going to think about. The past has just a way of sneaking up. I remember when my dad first took me to golf and he hit 12 shots in a row right into that water. Think about all the ways that maybe failure or shortcomings continue to come back in your mind, or the ways that your past creeps up into you. On a more personal level, if it's not just sports, perhaps it's losing weight. Anyone try a diet before or try exercising? There's always, you know, January comes around, there are new fads, new marketing that comes out, new ways to lose weight or to get healthier. But I have this way in my mind that comes back to me and says, Jared, remember all those other times you've tried and failed? Look where that got you when you tried those exercises or diets. Yeah, it got you 10 pounds heavier than when you started. So why even try this time? The past has this way of creeping in and maybe altering or shaping the choices that we make and the things we decide to do or don't do. Now, those are the fun ways, but I wonder if there are those more insidious times when the past comes into your head and into your memories, and then it reminds you that there's no point in even trying. Remember all those bad relationships that have fallen apart before? Why try again? Or think about those many countless times that you failed and fell short. There's no point in even trying this time. The past has a way of reminding us of all the times that we've missed. The past can have a way of getting in our eyes. That is, at least in part, what happened to God's people in the book of Numbers. They had two choices. They look at that green and go for the green that they're trying to hit, or they can get lost and confused in the water that's around them. They could catch the ball, or they could remember all the times that they failed instead of the times that they actually caught it, and they'd miss it. They had an opportunity to choose which past they would remember and which one would shape them going forward. And unfortunately, for the most part, they chose the water. They've chose the times they missed. They chose the past that prevented them from walking with God into a new and different future. Now, the book of Numbers is probably not on your top 10 list of favorite books in the Bible. It certainly is not one that I'd recommend Braden reading. It was the first one he reads in his new Bible. Brad, I wouldn't put this in your top 10. I might start with something with Jesus in it. No, unless you're a math guy. If you're a math guy, then maybe Numbers is for you. If you like reading names over and over and over and over again, then Numbers is your book. But Numbers isn't the most wily one, but it is one that's full of wonderful stories and history of God's people and God journeying with them through good times and bad into a new land. It's the story of God and God's people as they travel through the desert out of Egypt and toward the promised land. Now, last week, Pastor Kevin took us back to the very beginning of this story. Here, we're nearing the end as they're getting ready to enter into the promised land. Kevin talked about how before they were even a people, God called Abraham and Sarah and promised them that they would have descendants, countless descendants, that numerous descendants, even though up to that point they weren't able to have any children. In order for that to happen, though, Abraham had to pull up his tent stakes and leave all that was familiar with to him in order to follow God where God was leading him. It was a big ask then. It was an act of profound faith and incredible trust. It was new for Abraham. It was different. It was unfamiliar. And the same ask that God gave to Abraham wasn't just for him. God asked Abraham to leave the familiar and faithfully follow to something new. God made a big ask of Moses to go back to the place where he experienced some of his deepest pain and shame, to revisit there and let God redeem his past by working in and through Moses to draw the people out of Egypt. God made a big ask of the Israelites to trust and follow God, even though logic was telling them to do otherwise. God is a God who makes big asks of us. A big ask God gives to each one of us. How you respond to God's asks will be shaped by your past, but it cannot be determined by it. When God asks you to do something, it will be shaped by your past, but it cannot be determined by it. Or perhaps better, you need to choose which past you are going to let shape you respond and how you respond to God's call, to God's ask. See, these people had two options as they've been traveling to the promised land. You know it's a long journey. And just like a car ride or a long trip with the kids in the back seat, God's people are whining. You heard that well, right? Are we there yet? They complained as they walked through the wilderness eating their manna. Ugh, that'd be kind of gross too. I think I'd complain after 40 years of that. Why do we have to go so far? How much further? They didn't have a Doc McStuffins episode to pass the time. The people were whining and they were complaining because God was asking them to follow, to trust and obey, to be content with their daily bread. They were complaining and whining. You ever do that? No. Well, I'm not going to go down that road because the Israelites finally made it to where God was leading them. And so they sent spies into this new promised land to survey it, to see who's already there, to check out what areas they would go into or not go into. 12 are sent and 12 return. But upon their return, 10 say they should not go. It's too dangerous. The people are too big. They're too powerful. We are weak, little tiny grasshoppers. That's an analogy we probably wouldn't use as much today. But they said that they shouldn't go in because it's too dangerous. They should just go back. 2, however, said yes, Caleb and Joshua. You see, the people had two different options of which past would shape them, which past would determine how they would respond to God's ask. The 10 thought about all the times that they perhaps had tried and failed, remembering the past, how they are not enough, how they're just slaves who have been wandering through the land. They're not an army. They remembered the past that was negative, but the other two, Caleb and Joshua, recalled a past that God had worked in mighty and powerful ways in their own lives and in the lives of their history, of their people, of their back, of their family, of their relatives. They drew on the stories of God's faithfulness and God's preservation in the midst of change and uncertainty. They relied on that past to shape what they were doing and how they would do it. But it's the voices of the other 10 that caused the most problems. They were whining and pouting. If we go, we will fail, they say. We can't do it. We shouldn't do it. We won't do it. And so they started spreading rumors and getting the people riled up. The people became scared and afraid, and they began spreading more rumors about how they shouldn't go and about how they should elect new leaders and turn back. What voice do you let shape your decisions? What stories do you rely upon to shape your future? When God asks, what will you say? Fear and uncertainty were getting in the way of God's people. A past of failure and shortcomings continually crept back into their heads. The unfaithful 10 roused the people up and started rumors. Their unfaithfulness led to the unfaithfulness of others. Their fear made others afraid, and their lack of trust got in the way of others. They reminded me of a lesson my sixth grade teacher, Mr. Hunter, used to tell our class. He'd always tell us, don't be a good example of a bad example. Wise words for an 11-year-old to hear. Don't be a good example of a bad example. His words and the reaction of the people, particularly these 10 spies, these naysayers, these people who lacked the trust to follow into what God was calling them to do, reminded me of a core principle for we who follow Jesus. Our charge and our task collectively, so I'm not just talking personally, but I'm talking about the conversations you have in Sunday school or in your meetings in the parking lot or in town. Our job as the people of Christ is to champion the cause of Christ. No matter how we're feeling or the fears that we might have, there are appropriate ways we can have those conversations. But we need to be people who champion the cause of Christ, especially when it's not your thing or how you would choose to do it. We need to be people who champion the cause of Christ, especially when it's not what we would choose to do or how we would choose to do it. So, church, I'm just wondering, I wasn't planning on this, but we got some changes going around our church too, right? I love, Ralph did a great job of explaining what's going on. I want to know what kind of conversations you're having about the changes going on with the roads surrounding the church. No, I don't. I've heard enough of them to know, but I'm thinking, you know, there's an incredible opportunity that God is just right now asking us to trust and obey, to faithfully follow into a season of perhaps uncertainty. Now, Ralph helped clear it up a little bit. I don't know about that December date, Ralph. That was a bit ambitious by the city. But let's say it's done before 2018, and we get some new roads around here. In the meantime, or until we get to that promised land, how are your conversations going to go? Give me patience. That's a good one, right? Oh, I wonder, though, what God might be asking of you with respect to that. I'm wondering what God might be asking us as a church to be thinking about as we head into a season of uncharted waters. We have two options. Just like each one of us do individually, so too do we as a church have two options to be thinking about all the complications or the ways that it might fall short or cause problems. But that other option is to remember all the times that God asked the people of God to trust, to follow, to move forward into a new future. Because we serve the God who makes all things new. That's how the Bible ends in the book of Revelation. John, the island of Patmos, sees this vision of God sitting on the throne saying, "Behold, I am making all things new." So we have a choice, don't we? Of what kind of future we'll live into as a congregation and as individuals. The people in our story today chose to remember and to yearn for a misremembered past. They wanted to go back to Egypt. But Egypt was suffering. Egypt was oppression. Egypt was pain. Egypt was familiar. And so, friends, I'm wondering today, as God calls us collectively to do a new thing into the unfamiliar, into the unknown, what it is God is asking you individually. God continually invites us to take steps of faith, to get out of the boat just like Peter did so long ago, to do the illogical and to follow him. So what are you going to do?